Hello, it is now time for office hours. It's the top of the hour, so welcome to office hours for Prime. This is Prime Time. If you have any questions, please drop them in the office hours chat. That's two channels above the current one that you're in. If there are no questions, we'll sit here in silence. So enjoy, have fun. So our first question here is from Rampa. Rampa says they're asking if it'd be possible to build a modding reference on the Nias Wiki, and if yes, what sort of... It's up to you. You can put whatever you want on the wiki. People seem to still be under the impression, even with the policy, that modding is somehow bad. Just do what you want. The important juncture to make, though, is to make sure that people understand that modding is a choice and it is not a mandate, and that I don't believe that people should be forced or obligated to mod. And that might happen depending on how we present it and the features that are available in those mods. So just be careful about how the way things are worded. Yeah, that's it, really. Do what you want. Oh, we should also make sure that, you know, it's not supported. If you break something, Neos can't help you. So Rampa has an interesting follow-up question, which is how do you make sure that you're not committing a source leak? By source leak, I predict that you're referring to the EULA wordage about stuff like that. I mean, but depending on what type of documentation you're after, I probably actually wouldn't suggest the wiki. Like technical documentation, such as the one that you're describing, so header, type info, stuff like that, isn't suitable for a wiki. It would be more suitable for some sort of custom tooling. If it's custom tooling, that also means you can do what you want over on the Neos Mod Loader's kind of website, etc. So maybe look into that. I can't really like enforce or comment or like say when it comes to the EULA like what is and isn't available, because that's based on the company and I'm not part of said company. So keep an eye on that. My recommendation would be to keep it as like little as possible. Like you can explain modding without too much like Neos source code stuff, but yeah, like technical information, which I would call reference type, which is like, you know, like, hey, this variable is of type this, this is of type this, isn't suitable for a wiki. There are much better tools out there for that. Yeah. All right. Any other questions? Drop them in Office Hours text chat, which is two above the channel that you're in to enter this Office Hours segment, and I'll get to them in the order that they appear. Voila. For those just joining, if you have questions, please drop them in the Office Hours text chat. That is two channels above the one you clicked to get into this, and I'll answer them in the order that they appear. We don't have any questions right now, so we'll sit in unending torment of just silence. So Lex has an interesting question regarding a question I asked yesterday in the questions and help, which is I was asking for the text that needed to be entered into the attach component menu for a sync array float, which is what I needed yesterday. So the reason I need a sync array float yesterday was the time I'm trying to graph stuff. And for those who haven't done graphing in Neos, you need to use a value graph recorder and a rect line mesh or UIX rect line mesh. I think it's the same component, just different wording, whatever. Due to layouting, those things usually need to be located like distinctly apart from each other. And so I have a list of configuration objects which define like what the graph should look like, which are separate from the graphing area. And so I need some way to link those across slots. Now, of course, everyone will say like, yo, dynamic variables will be great for that. But like, hey, I need a dynamic variable, a reference to a sync array float so that I can write it into the value graph recorder. It was like fun. I think there's a way to do it. Now I have the appropriate component hierarchy like text available, but like I gotta like figure out what I want to do there. I also need to do like a tiered like a deletey thing. So when you delete the graph entry, it will be like, all right, I deleted the graph entry. Cool. I can hop over to the graph area and also delete the graph that's on the other side. And that should be fun. I can do that with like some dynamic variables that are slots, because that's easy. But I don't know if I might even need to do like the sync ref sync array. I'll take a look the next time I'm in. Moving onwards, we have another question from Pilksha, who says, is there a way to override or add up to an avatar's IK animation, another animation, like some other time? I have a different way of walking compared to what procedural walking has. Yes, I'm so glad you asked, because so many people ask about this. all of the walking animations in Nios are procedural, and they are editable by you. You just need to know where to look. Inspect the root of your avatar and find, I can never remember if it's on VRIK or VRIK avatar or whatever, but just like those components. There'll be a list of things called gates. Gates control how you walk, and they are entirely procedural. And you can define all sorts of stuff, like how big a step is. So if you increase the step size, you get to sort of a march which German soldiers did around World War II called goose stepping. It's kind of sort of like frowned upon to do that sort of thing because, you know, it's reminiscent of those troops back then. But other military people do it as well. Where are we? Here's a picture. Yeah, it looks like lots of military do it. I just remember it being like overly associated with Nazis, so I don't usually mention it. Anyway, there you go. So if you edit the gate settings, and then you'll end up with all sorts of stuff. So this is, who is this? China. This is the Chinese military doing that kind of march. You know, where their foot is reaching unnaturally far forward, so you can totally control that in the gate. That would probably be in the feet range, because that's the range which your feet move. I do want to go through and document all of those properties such that you know what they are. But they are quite cool. I do know the speed ratio, if you increase that, that's the number of steps that occur. And so if you make that really high, you'll basically end up looking like a jackhammer, right? Your feet will just constantly be like clapping on the floor. So take a look at those, play around with them. My best recommendation for you is to remove all of them, so except one, and then change the minimum velocity on that one to be just zero, so it always applies, and then play around with that one. The reason why there are multiples depending on the velocity is because as you increase in speed, your stance will change. If you think of a horse goes through several gates as they speed up. Actually, horse gates like a really interesting like thing and topic to read about, but that's for another day. I've ridden a horse once. It's a Wikipedia article about goose stepping. It is stupid. It is incredibly inefficient. Do not goose step. I don't know why they do it. It's impressive, I guess, and can be very synchronized. All right, moving around to questions. Someone said I missed one, so I'll go ahead and hunt for that one. Ah, yes, I missed Specs' question. Specs asked, I'm working on some monitoring stuff for headless, and there's a bunch of public variables related to time for sessions, like average update time, last update time. Do you know if these are measured in nanoseconds or milliseconds or something like that? I have no idea. Usually our unit is like seconds, because we use a float, and then fractionals of that second are then milliseconds, but I don't know. I'd have to look. Jumping up and down to... Okay, now Dre's question. So Dre says, easiest place to get a good help start into Logix besides just picking up the Logix tip and starting? Honestly, pick up the Logix tip and start. I don't on my channel have any sort of beginner or introductory videos to Logix, but I know that other channels do. Basement Nerd has a very good video about just getting started. Something which I would encourage you to do is to just do stuff and not worry about it. Lots of stuff I do with people is to encourage them to just lay out nodes and not really worry what they're doing. A lot of people are like, I want to use Logix to make, you know, Half-Life Alyx 2. I'm like, well, that's a bit of a stretch. You don't know Logix. Or they'll go like, I want to make this really complicated gun. I'm like, well, that's a bit of a stretch. Why don't you try adding two numbers together and then go from there, right? Make Logix that doesn't really have a function outside of your learning, and you'll get a lot better there. Also, forget what you know about all programming. Like, Logix just isn't programming. People are like, is it like C-sharp or is it like Java? And I'm like, no, it's just Logix. Like, it's often better to just forget what you already know and just learn it from scratch. Rampus says, would it be possible to get to try and brainstorm to create some sort of guidelines what would enforce modding docs from an approved shareable intel for a bio from the team side as an appendix to the modding policy? I'm still not sure what you're on about here. Like, you can't share, of course, decompiled code. That's against the EULA. You can't share stuff that breaks the guidelines, right, or come after you about that. But anything else, you should be fine. Like, I look at all the source codes for all the mods, and I'm like, that's fine. I don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't be able to write a guideline or a policy against that, because I don't know what you need. I don't understand. I can't remember correctly or not, but, like, I think... Going back to gates for a second, an unoccupied avatar will still match the gates when you move it. So something I've experimented with doing is putting an avatar on the floor so that their feet are touching the floor on an axis panner. and then varying the speed of the access pattern, sometimes that will show the gates without you being in the avatar, which is kind of cool. I did have a world that was looking to make that into a tool. It's going to be called, like, I don't know, a gate editor, right? And you would, like, sort of load your avatar onto, I guess, a treadmill. And then you'd set the speed of the treadmill and watch how the feet work. But I don't particularly know if that works or what state that will be in. Drace follows up their question on learning logics with some people going to the very nitty-gritty of it. Yeah, that's problematic. Don't let them do that. I see a lot of people that, like, you know, they'll inspect logics nodes, or they'll talk about performance, or worrying about nodes, or say, hey, don't use this or don't use that. Every single logics node that exists is designed to be used by you. So if anyone tells you not to use anything, particularly whilst you're learning, don't listen to them. Just use it. I don't advise, they also talk about, Drace talks about starting with gestures. I don't advise gestures. Like, I don't advise learning logics via gestures. You'll just give yourself a headache. I want you to learn logics, not how to build something. So lay out nodes, look at the things, look at the way that things work. Another very important thing is to get your vocabulary down. I know a lot of people who are quite proficient Neos users, but when I use vocabulary, they're like, that's not what you call that. And I'm like, it literally is. You can, like, inspect the thing, and that's what it's called. So I don't know what you're saying. Like, as an example, you should know what the words node, interface card, relay, reference arrow, drive, impulse, ribbon. You should know what these words mean. In addition, you should also know what the word primary, secondary, and context means. Everyone's like, there's so many controls in here, so I don't know which button to push. And I'm like, there's three. Primary, secondary, and context menu. That's it. Primary, secondary, context menu. That's it. But technically, there's grab as well, but, like, grab is such a visceral one that people get it. I don't know, because, like, I haven't had any family close to my VR headsets in many years, but I remember, you know, trying to teach my mother to play Grand Theft Auto. It was a funny story. And, you know, there's tons of buttons on, like, an Xbox controller or whatever, and she just doesn't know which one is to go. And I'm like, that one on the right-hand side that feels like a trigger, that will make you go. And she got it, right, because it's such a tactile experience. I believe the same there is true for grab, right? It's grab the controller and you grab stuff. But yeah, primary, secondary, context menu, grab. Those are the only things you need to learn in terms of controls. And once you know those, you're good. Also learn packing as well. So many people, like, worry about, like, red prints and blueprints and orange prints and pink prints and whatever the hell else you want to call it. Pack and unpack stuff. Just practice it. Make some shitty logics that does absolutely nothing. Like, I don't know, adds two numbers together. Pack it into a box. Save the box to your inventory. Bring the box out. Unpack it. Do that, like, 17 times. You'll never have questions about packing again. If someone floats over in the middle of you learning logics and they're like, oh, you can do that better another way if you use components, bap them on the face with a breadstick and tell them that Prime told you that that's a bad thing to do. Because I noticed that happening a lot. Oh, you could do that better. Oh, and please, for those who are unaware that this is a bad thing to do, if you are not editing the logics or helping someone with the logics, please do not insert your avatar into the logics. I've had people fall asleep inside my logics. They come into the session, they hang out with me, they're chatting to me, parts of their avatar are intersecting my nodes, and then they fall asleep. And it's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Get out of my logics. All right, I got to catch up with questions rather than talking about either goose stepping or learning logic some more. Let's take a look. Yeah, Rusia has a question. Cool. Rusia says, are there any automated methods for re-enabling nodes that have gone red? In the ham radio world, we're finding that WebSocket and downstream nodes are going red, often with servers inundated with something like a world save or avatar loading. I wonder if there's a way to reset them without pulling out the logics or finding to name. There's no automated way to do it, but there are ways to prevent it from happening. So usually those nodes would go red because there is an influx of data, or the nodes are being called too many times. So, and I know it sounds stupid, but just don't do that. So, like, there are various ways to do that, but you need to kind of figure out a way that will enable those nodes not to become swarmed. Something which you should remember when it comes to live data, which you mentioned via WebSockets as well, is that if the logic system is struggling to keep up, make sure that you know what the lifetime or the lifetime of a single message coming through is. As an example here that is probably relevant, when the heart rate system that uses WebSockets. It talks to a Bluetooth heart rate monitor, which speaks to your computer, opens up a WebSocket server, sends WebSocket messages to Neos, and then you display your heart rate in your name badge the size of, like, Mount Vesuvius, and I get really annoyed. But anyway, your heart rate's, like, the size of a mountain on top of your head, and every couple of seconds, the WebSocket is going, here's my heart rate, here's my heart rate, here's my heart rate. If you are struggling, or the node system is slowing down or whatever, and like, it's okay to skip some messages because you've always got the next message coming through that gives you information about what your heart rate is. So you don't need to process every single message. You just need to process as many messages as you can. So there is an opportunity to drop some of the messages. So do keep that in mind. We did that a lot during racing. Of course, like, so I used to do racing software and it's very complicated. But so we had like a master controller and it was running the race. It knew who was first, who was second, etc. But it would regularly send out those updates to view displays around sort of the race circuit and the track to be like, yo, this person's winning. And those would get overloaded because sometimes there's like 300 bikes on track and it's really complicated. And so we would drop packets, right? Because we always knew the next available status was coming out. So we would drop them and be like, it's okay, it can be invalid for like a split second whilst the next update comes. Let's not stress out about, like, you know, doing that. We also see that SteamVR does that. You know, they drop frames. OBS does that when you're streaming. It drops frames, right? It's just like, it's okay sometimes to just throw out some data if you don't need it. Moving onwards. Deception says, what's going on? You're currently in the Office Hours AMA from Prime to ask about Neo stuff. So ask some questions in the Office Hours channel that you're typing in, and I'll answer them. Gina says, any plans for new logic nodes or logic performance improvements? Yes. Lots. Rampa says, and this is a follow-up to their previous question, so let's get into it. Let's rub my hands together. I'm not sure exactly how to formulate this. I vaguely remember someone saying something along got all tongue-tied there. Someone said something along the lines of, I don't feel comfortable discussing this stuff. You want to look for and mod in modding Discord. Do it in DM so we don't get into problems, or at least something like that. What I say is that I feel there should be some guidelines saying, as long as you don't say too much about this, you're 90% okay, written by Freaks himself. Disagree. I'll answer that in a moment, though. Essentially, it all hits back to the modding policy, ex-Euler contradiction, the thing that we discussed many times, at least how I feel about it. Fruks doesn't have to write everything. Whenever you see the word Fruks, I want you to replace it with Neos the company. I know there's issues in announcements, etc., but just replace it with Neos the company. Like, seriously. It's like, well, Fruks needs to do that. No, Neos the company needs to do that. If Fruks is actually the person that needs to do it, fine, but let's remove the word Fruks from the vocabulary. That's what we did when we wrote the modding policy, the security policy, all the rules, all the guidelines, etc. Those are written by Neos the company, or Neos's moderation team, or Prime, because it takes the emphasis off Fruks needing to do everything, right? If I need to speak to Fruks to get whatever I need written, I will. And he read and reviewed both the modding policy and the security policy before it was released to anyone. That's totally fine. It doesn't need to be written by him. I got to be in my bonnet about that, because it's like from the old days, it was just like, well, Fruks needs to do that. No, anyone can do that. Anyone can do that. Anyway, we can't do that till we resolve that EULA modding policy contradiction. What I will say to you, though, is maybe keep the modding discussion to the modding Discord. And if it's in the modding Discord, it's your guys' Discord. We have no purview to say don't do that there. If we get reports or tickets about the EULA being contradicted over there, it's I don't know what will happen, because it's like off platform and sort of out of our purview, and the modding policy says it's okay to do, but like, I still don't understand the issue at play here. People shouldn't feel that modding is bad or that modding is against the rules. We have a policy that says it's okay, so just do it, ? I don't understand. It's probably situational, depending on an individual thing. Just because I see realms of another topic here, I do want to touch on it as well. I see like there might be problems if we do this. If you are worried about problems occurring because you do X, ask. Drop in a ticket. It's okay to drop in a ticket and be like, I am going to blow up the moon. Will I be modded, have mod restrictions against me on Neos if I do that? Perfectly okay ticket. Go for it. Let us know what you're worried about. I can't stand people saying like, oh yeah, guys, there's rumors, and the rumors are bad. the last time someone said that to me, we took it to DMs, and I'm like, those aren't rumors, and none of them are bad or security-related at all. So just keep that in mind. So Riccio now says, what method would you recommend for dropping those sets of impulses off the WebSocket receiver? Local impulse timeout? Yeah, probably local impulse timeout. You could also use some sort of queuing system, which of course you'd need collections for, but local impulse timeout once per frame. Local leaky impulse bucket. I have to say that very carefully because some friends of mine have a less than professional nickname for it. Which I won't speak of. You could also look at like how often the data gets duplicated from your end on the server as well. So if your server is constantly sending the same data every like second, maybe up to every 2 seconds, and then you've halved your data load, right? You've halved the bandwidth. Also consider polling as well. I've noticed, and I don't know anything about your scenario, so I don't know if this is the case, but I've noticed a lot of people confuse HTTP nodes and WebSockets and are just like, you have to use WebSockets for everything. And I'm like, no. Like the world uses HTTP. We don't all use WebSockets. A good example here might be, let's think about Discord actually. So when you load Discord first thing in the morning, and I'm not sure exactly works like this, but hey, this is how I would do it. When you first load Discord in the morning, it will do a HTTP request to Discord and say, give me the history of the office hours channel, and you'll get all that history down. And then when you're connected and you're synced up to that, it'll then use WebSockets or something similar to that to get new messages so they get them live. But it's constantly doing HTTP requests, right? It's like everyone's like, no, I got my WebSockets. I'm like, well, just trust me here. HTTP is sometimes better. Moving forwards, Deception asks, what's Neos' favorite food? I don't know. You'd have to ask Neos. Dre says, some time ago, I was accidentally crashed out due to unload a video player getting deleted in my homeworld. Crash forced Neos to save all changes and all the untidy mess of my homeworld. In that point in time, is there a way to prevent the forced oversaving in case of another crash? Not currently. I do have some recommendations, which are don't use your homeworlds. I know that sounds kind of strange, but like I don't use them. My homeworlds are jump points. I've got like world orbs to various projects I'm doing and all sorts of stuff like that. I do that to avoid the problem that currently exists. We do have some open GitHub issues about sort of what to do there, settings, maybe tweaks, settings, config, stuff like that that might help. But until then, I don't recommend using them. Like my homeworld is literally like how to get to somewhere else quicker or the space which I like hang out in whilst I'm waiting to join another world. You can even like put something in your homeworld, which is like a big button that's like open my actual like hangout world, right? And then when you launch, you just like boop, click the button, it opens the world, does it all for you. And that way you're not like really missing any of the stuff like that. Yeah, you know, I've got like 2 bookshelves. Left bookshelf is in progress. Right bookshelf is finished, but sort of reference. There's been like a Roman amphitheater style thing about 20 units to the right of where my homeworld starts for about a year now, and I just keep forgetting to delete it. So that just leaves there. I was going to make it into a world, but then I kept forgetting, and now it's just kind of there. It's strange. I don't really know why I've forgotten to do it, but yeah, it's something like this, and it's just like sat there in my home world somewhere and just sat there doing nothing. Moving forward, so Rusi has more information about the WebSocket stuff. They're doing it to get the RF level. Okay, cool. Any changes from the server are sent, but they're sending a maximum of 20 updates per second. It's kind of important to receive this many updates so we can get real-time information on what we are receiving to the other end of the radio connected in real life. Yeah, at that point, I'd probably just have to look at the node setup. There's probably something you're doing somewhere that can be improved to prevent red nodes. If there's a particular area that's redding out, think about how you can restructure it such that the data coming in from the WebSockets is isolated from the rest of the system. For example, you might write that RF level to a dynamic variable and then pick it up elsewhere, and then you've ended your impulse chain very quickly. Like you receive the RF level, you write it to a dynamic variable, you're done. You're done, and then nothing else happens in that particular impulse chain. That's another thing I want people to do when they learn logics as well, is pack early, end impulse chains early. Like, it's always better to have more than one impulse chain than have an impulse chain that is, like, the size of the planet. It's like, and then we do this, and then we do that, and then we do this, and then we do that, and then we do this, and then we do that. And I'm like, okay. Maybe just like chuck in a dynamic impulse receiver in the middle there so you don't have to like keep doing stuff on the same chain. Another good way to look at it is when people talk about sort of multi-threaded asynchronous programming, things like that. They're very complicated, but just think about it this way. If there is a break, as in between impulse chains, it gives time for the computer to like catch up, right? So you're doing, hey, I'm doing this impulse chain. I'm going to stop and immediately trigger using whatever method you want to trigger another impulse chain. Cool. But in the split second between one impulse chain finishing and another impulse chain starting, it gives chance for the logics engine to be like, ah, cool, I can relax a little bit. I can chill out, right? So it's more uncommon to see red nodes in that case. Froppy's providing some information about Dote opening the cloud home. I like that. I use it because it like has lots of links in it, but I don't put video players or anything like that in it. It's like a mirror and some world orbs. Moving forward to other questions, just checking you haven't missed any. Specs has a question here. Speaking of homewares, I tried to set my local headless server as a session. I auto-join when I start up Neos. I tried using the documented command line parameters, but didn't seem to have any luck. Do you have a working example of what using auto-join parameters looks like? I don't have an example. I would highly recommend using the custom session ID stuff for headless, because that's really cool, and that should be a little bit easier to launch into, but I don't have a specific example. Ozzy has a question, which is, oh, I got a question. Is there a nice write-up on how Neos' data model works? I'm wondering how Neos thinks things with other players. No. I know the H3 was working on one for like how logics works, which is kind of interesting, but I don't think they like published it yet. They're still working on it. I hate mentioning this again, but I do want to caution people. Some of that stuff should be invisible to you. A lot of times people are like, you know, how do I use like an I-field bracket sync ref bracket sync bracket sync sync sync? And I'm just like, what are you doing? Stop. Like, you shouldn't use that lower level part of the engine. You should use something above that to do what you need to do. And that can be a case there when you're looking too much into the data model and how it works. Like, if there is a problem, that's a better question. So I'm just making sure that that question doesn't hide a problem behind that question. And if it doesn't, that's totally fine. But if it does, make sure you're asking the question that caused the chain of thought to lead up to generally how the data model works. Because you shouldn't ideally need to know how it works. Moving down to Gina, what logics projects do you want to see people make more of? I want you to see people make more of not multi-tools, not avatar gesture systems. If you're making anything other than those two things, fantastic. Just go ahead and do it. Games, experiences, artwork, science, data visualization, all sorts of stuff like that. I don't need to see another multi-tool. Don't build blueprints either. I see what a lot of people do is they're making tools to make stuff. Like, I am making a hammer to hammer some nails. I'm making a screwdriver to screw in some screws. What I want to see is, what are you building? Oh, I'm building a bird box. Great. I want to see more bird boxes. I don't want to see more hammers, if that makes sense. Those tools are great, but I've lost count of the amount of people that join my session, and they're like, hey, Prime, can I show you the multi-tool I'm working on? And I just go, no. It's hard to not be rude about it, but like, I've seen enough. I don't need to see any more multi-tools. Thanks. Ozzy follows up that says it's just curiosity because I know how half it works. Yeah, understood. Yeah, I'm just making sure. Sometimes I've seen people that are like, how does logics work? Or like, how does locomotion work? And then I ask them some more questions and I find out that they're trying to do something that's solved with a logics node or a component that they haven't realized exists. Moving forwards to Drace's question, are there any ways in logics to essentially take a rotation of a bone and tell another bone to imitate the rotation and then use some multiply map to tell it to use any part of the rotation? Yes, I don't know it though. We have a full mathematical engine for quaternions. We also have some shortcut mathematics like look rotation, inverse rotation, from two rotation, axis angle, stuff like that. But it's all hardcore maths. You need to understand the maths about it. Good example here being, I do this on a 2D plane just because 2D is what I know. I was once many, many, many years ago making a 2D space shooter, you know, the enemy ship was going to fire a missile at the player ship. And I'm like, well, how do I make the missile rotate such that it faces the player ship and then moves towards it? And I'm like, oh, let's figure this out. Let's try and do it. And I did lots of research and I figured out, hey, it's just maths. The A10-2 operator will do that for you. It will take the, I never remember how to use it. I have to look it up every time. I know, like, I just Google A10-2, I'll figure it out. But you get the X and Y of a thingy and you plug it in and it gives you an angle. And then you rotate the ship to that angle or the missile to that angle and it's aimed directly at the player. And then you move it there. That's a good example where I'm just like, cool, maths solved my problem. Thumbs up. Maths solved my problem. Gungriffin or Kip says, note to self, make a bird box hammer. Yeah, remember the DIY sort of like wooden furniture world that was one of the MC entries? That's beautiful, right? That's a good example. Hey, there's lots of stuff you can do there. If you made like just like a 2x4 with nails that you could hammer in and then maybe a reset button that brings the nails back up to their non-hammered in height. I love that. Lots of people really like that. People like the tactile tools you can make. And with that, we're actually over time by a lot. So Rampa and Kip, if you have a question, please feel free to finish typing. Otherwise, no more questions. Okay, we have two more questions. So Rampa says, is it possible to create a copy button on a user-made creation? Facet world, copy is in clipboard copy. It is. People do it kind of in a hacky way. They use the like control C, control V multi-key thing, where basically they fake it like it's one of our keyboards, but it isn't one of our keyboards. There is like a problem in that because it's sort of difficult to do, understand, and explain. I'd like to see a way to do it that had like maybe, you know, a defined way of doing it. We could also put more security into that way, for example. Like we could have a setting, allow logics to access my clipboard, which would default to off because that sounds like a terrible move. Or maybe like it defaults to only allow like put stuff in your clipboard, but it can't read the clipboard. I don't know. Like if we put a system in place that was more controlled there, we can add protections around that. But yeah, right now, virtual multi-key, control C, control V, it's difficult. Usually need to do control A, control C, control V. Take a look at any of the cloud spawners that exist. I believe there's one in Red Print. There's one in a bunch of the JP stuff. Is that like backpack thing the JP have? I forget what it's called. That you sort of have like a radial menu that can spawn stuff from a public folder. It's cool. Moving onwards to the next question. In an effort to make a robust mesh-to-mesh touch detection system, can you sample the color of a pixel on an intersect material to detect if a mesh is intersecting near it? I don't know. That appears to be what I call empirical question, which is, please go ahead and try it and let me know what your result is. I think it should work, but like I'm not sure what you're trying to do, so I probably wouldn't like say do that. Depends what you're trying to do. Like, I'm then seeing OZ respond with like, hey, use cameras. And like, if you're just trying to collide, why not like use colliders? Why do people not use colliders? Yeah, deformed mesh collider probably might not match up sometimes. So to break it to you there, like you're never going to get like a mesh collider with a deformed mesh working correctly. I would strongly recommend you go after the procedural colliders, which are placed within an avatar's hierarchy. And if it's a custom mesh with a rig, add those procedural meshes. So a good example is if you look at your hand has a box collider on it, which represents the sort of square that is your hand. Your arm has a cylinder on it because it's a cylinder, and that is what you should be colliding with. You shouldn't be colliding with the actual mesh. That is fraught with difficulties. If you want to use a camera with that or the sample color node fit, good luck. I think it'll work. I would just question the sanity in doing that. So last question, Atul from Drace, that says, is it possible to have a custom spawn point for your own avatar or a workaround to make it seem like you spawned on your desired point? Yeah, you can do like, if you do like a on, like go to flow events and then use on start. On start gets triggered when the like the system that you're loading in, like avatar, object, whatever, like starts up, like it's a defined event. And so you can trigger on start. And then I would wait, like, I don't know, a second or two, and then teleport yourself. I would question again why you need to do that. Usually when you load into a map, the spawn point that you're given is tailored to the map creator. Good example here being if you're in, I don't know, a parkour map, you would want the player to spawn at the start of the parkour, map and not at the end of the parkour map.
Yeah, you could, if you're just teleporting to someone, just teleport to them. Just jump to them. You can even put, this is a great example of the XY problem, so we'll go over a little bit more to explain it. So your problem, Drace, was losing friends in a world, and your solution was change spawn point. You should have asked about your problem, which is getting back to friends in the world, rather than your intended solution, which is change spawn point. So now that we know that your actual problem is losing friends, there are better ways to do that, which are the jump menu in the session menu, or a context menu, or whatever you want inside your actual avatar, which will give a list of players in the session and teleport you to them. Like, you can make a custom context menu, which does a ring of all the players in a session, and then when you click on that button, it can teleport you to it. That's quite easy to do.
Yeah, well, they want to jump to a point not on top of your friend. You'll probably want to take the position of your friend, go out a radius from there, and teleport to there. So you take the position of the friend, you add a radius to that, and then you teleport to that. You, again, can do that with maths. I would probably take their position and then add their left or right vector to it and a little bit. And that will make you spawn to the left or right of them by a little bit. You could also do forward or back, and then you'll appear in front of them or behind them, which is both scary, hence why I suggested left or right, because then that's not scary. I need to do more videos on the left, right, up, down, forward, backwards nodes, because they're amazing and no one uses them. We are totally out of time, so I'm going to go ahead and kill things off here. Thank you for your questions today. If you have any follow-up questions, feel free to direct message me at any time or attend another office hours section. If you have any questions about moderation related matters, please remember you can just open up a ticket. If you're confused, you're unsure, open up a ticket. We can get back to you there. Otherwise, keep reading the wiki, keep reading the announcements channel, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye.